We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate, and five-star app Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpus. We're hoping that your meditation practice is giving you what you need to stay more calm, grounded, and resilient this winter, wherever you are. I honestly don't know what I'd do without my meditation practice. If you haven't yet and you want to start meditating or you want to deepen your practice, check out the Muse S headband. You'll learn how to meditate, you'll get feedback on your meditation practice, and this particular version is designed to help you sleep as well. Check it out at choosemuse.com and use your Muse Stress Less promo code for your discount. Today's guest is Eric Maisel. Eric is a psychotherapist, teacher, coach, and author. His most recent book is called The Power of Daily Practice, How Creative and Performing Artists Can Finally Meet Their Goals. I actually think it's applicable to many of us. The idea is that a daily practice is a real muscle that can be acquired, that we can learn, and that can lead to accomplishments. Meditation's one daily practice, but this book talks about 18 different practices for the many different parts of our lives. And it goes over the necessary elements of a practice, like self-discipline, self-direction, and devotion. He also talks about the many challenges we can overcome that will help us to optimize our practices, whatever they are. It's lots of great food for thought. Now, here's Eric. Eric, it's great to have you on Untangle today. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
I found your book, The Power of Daily Practice, super interesting. Lots of juicy stuff to talk about. But let's start with what inspired you to write this book.
That one's easy. I've been working with creative and performing artists for 35 years now, first as a therapist and then as a coach. And what I noticed was when they missed a little time doing their work, let's say they didn't write for three consecutive days or four consecutive days, suddenly they lost weeks and months and years and even decades. The problem wasn't losing a little time, it was losing a lot of time. And this was a consistent result, a consistent finding that when folks stopped doing their real work for a little while, they stopped doing it for a long time. So I wanted to underline the idea of daily practice, a phrase that goes in one ear and out the other, but it's actually super important. If you're trying to get anything accomplished in life, if you start to not do that thing for a little while, you're likely to not do it for a long while just because so many other things encroach, so many other things creep in, so many other things on our to-do list demand our attention. So that's why I wrote this book, to remind folks that if you do things in a daily way, you'll actually get them done.
Yeah, well, it seems super obvious with performing artists. Obviously, if you're a pianist or you play any kind of an instrument, you need to practice to get really good. I mean, these are obvious things. We all know this. But we don't think about it when we start thinking about what's most important to us, what's our purpose. So let's talk about how you're taking this idea of a daily practice from creative and performing artists into all of the things that we want to improve in our own lives.
Sure. This will be a tiny bit long-winded because I have to deal with both life purposes and meaning. So it'll be a little abstract, a little long-winded, but in my view of life, there isn't a purpose to life. There are just our life purpose choices. They're the things we decide are important. And most people have never actually made that list. It's a shifting list, but at a given moment in time, we need to decide what's important to us. Things change in terms of their importance. So once we've identified what's important to us, our life purpose choices, then we have to figure out how to get to them in a daily way. It's one thing to have a nice list of important things. It's another thing to get to them. Most people do not organize their days around their life purposes. They organize it around their duties, chores, tasks, responsibilities, and what have you. So in my way of thinking, you identify your life purposes, and then you make decisions about which of those you're going to get to on a given day, and those become your practices, whether it's your creativity practice or your mindfulness practice or your health practice. What you're really doing there is you're announcing that these are the things that are important enough to me to try to get to in a daily way. Let me put a comma there. Now, with respect to meaning, meaning is also something that I don't think is out there. I don't think there is a meaning to life, but rather we do or don't have meaningful experiences. Meaning is a certain kind of psychological experience. The reason I bring this up is it's important in the following way, because a lot of the things we do that we think are important don't produce the experience of meaning. And this is kind of odd. You'd think that if you were writing your novel, it would feel meaningful to be writing your novel. But as any writer knows, on most days, it's just a sloggy experience, even a negative experience sometimes. So the point I want to make is that we identify our life purposes, we try to live them, and we live them without needing them to come with any guarantee that we're going to experience those practices as meaningful.
It's interesting that you talk about it as a slog, because my own personal experience with writing, of course, it's not something that you're inspired to sit down and do every day. But how do you build that muscle that you talk about in the book, that muscle that can't be acquired, you say, in any other way? How do you do that so that you have the discipline to sit down every day? Is it in small increments? Is it just making this giant commitment once you know what your life purpose is? And does it always have to have an end goal?
Well, you use the D word, discipline. So let me start there. Pavarotti had a quote I liked, which was, people say I'm disciplined, but it's not discipline, it's devotion. And there's a big difference. I don't think we get to our practices out of discipline. Discipline's a lovely thing, but I don't think we get to our practices out of discipline. I think we get to them because we're devoted to them in the sense that we have announced that they are important to us. It's again back to our life purposes. We're not leading a life of purpose unless we've identified our life purposes and are living them. So I think that's the glue, or that's the reason we return each day, not because we're disciplined, but because there's something really important about it to us. Now, that doesn't mean, even though it's important to us, it doesn't mean that we necessarily need to be making progress. Progress is a very tricky word. It comes from the transcendentalists a couple of hundred years ago, who believed that America was all about progress. And actually, their image for America was the upward spiral. We're always supposed to be going forward, going up, getting higher, doing bigger, better. With respect to our practices, we should not need to be making progress with respect to them. We should be showing up without attaching to outcomes. It's that lack of progress that often stops people from continuing their practice, because maybe they wrote 7 words and took 9 words out. They actually went backwards on a given day and they feel demoralized. But rather than feeling demoralized, they should feel proud that they got to their practice and that they lived one of their life purposes on that day. So to say this simply, there are many challenges to daily practice. And one of them is the idea that we have to make progress. Another is the anxiety that wells up in us when we have to make choices. There are all kinds of challenges to practice. That's why a full third of the book is about overcoming challenges to practice. Once you get a picture of the kinds of challenges to practice that exist, I think you can begin to see how you can create a daily practice that will work for you.
What role does motivation play? You may not feel motivated to go through the slog of writing or whatever it is you're working on.
Yep. I think the motivation is that you're living your life purposes. That is the motivation. So I think the thing we're talking about, daily practice, is a certain dance between attachment and detachment. I think we want to attach in the sense that we want to have goals in life, ambitions, dreams, hopes, loves, passion, all those things. Those are all attachments. I think we need them. That's our motivational juice, comma. But we also need to know how to detach, especially from outcomes. So you attach because you want to write your novel and you show up because you're excited about your novel, and then you let go of needing that writing day to be okay. So that's kind of an intricate dance where you come with lots of excitement and enthusiasm, and then, to put it in Virginia Woolf's terms, then resignation sets in.
So do you think it's better to do things in small increments so you don't put too much pressure on yourself, like spend just, say, 20 minutes?
It's so funny that you picked that number, because that's the number that all new clients pick as to how much time they want to devote to whatever it is they want to start doing, their writing, their painting. They always pick 20 minutes, and I think I know why, and that is they don't want to disappoint themselves again. They would really like to say an hour or 2 hours or 5 hours or a million hours, but they know that they've tried to say that in the past and failed at that and disappointed themselves. So now they want to start with a very modest goal, and it's almost always 20 minutes. So the short answer is yes, daily practice that's short is better than no daily practice. Of course, a longer daily practice, if that's what's appropriate, is even better. But the showing up, the getting there, the not skipping days, which is a big deal, to show up for 20 minutes every day is much better than to show up once a month for 6 hours.
Doesn't it depend also on the particular thing that you're practicing? So a 20-minute meditation practice every day is great. Same with a gratitude practice. But if you want to be a concert pianist, 20 minutes on the piano every day may not quite do that. If you want to finish your novel by December 15th, 20 minutes may not do that. I also want to know, first, how do you coach your clients so that they're most, even though we're not attached to the outcome, we're heading in the direction we want to head in?
It's exactly the conversation you just had with yourself. It's exactly the same conversation. It sounds like the client saying, I think I can do about 20 minutes. And then the client next saying, but I do have a concert coming up, so really an hour would be more appropriate. And then I would say, well, go for 20 minutes as the minimum and see if you can stay for an hour.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
It's that simple. The first thing, though, is to show up for those 20 minutes. Then it's to stay on. And I have lots of tactics around staying put. When the anxiety wells up and a person wants to leave the practice, to take small breaks rather than to actually flee the encounter, go make some air pop popcorn or a cup of tea, but come back. So there are ways to make 20-minute stints into one-hour stints through practice. But again, the main thing is to show up in that daily way, even for 30 seconds, just to keep that continuity and regularity and really simplicity of knowing that every day you're doing X.
Let's say somebody wants to write something, but they're feeling stuck. I mean, right now during COVID, a lot of the discussions I'm having are about people feeling stuck, not feeling creatively inspired. There's just not a lot enough happening in their worlds, even though there's a lot happening outside of our worlds. What do you say when we're really stuck creatively?
There are lots of different things to say. One of the conversations I will have is to just ask about the writing. What are you writing? And then when the writer starts to talk about what she's writing, some enthusiasm often returns, and that becomes the full unblocker. And I can hear if there's a problem in the work as she's talking about. She may not be writing, not because she's not motivated, but because there's actually some technical problem in the book, some plot problem, some character problem that she's avoiding. So it would be a conversation that we would have, and that's a way that the unblocking would happen through the conversation. But also, I would simply ask her to agree to, commit to, for the coming week, showing up for a few minutes each day, irrespective of her mood. And I often use the following analogy. In the days before World War II, we don't care if Eisenhower feels blocked or unmotivated or anxious or depressed or anything. We need him to get the invasion right. We need him to do his work. And so I'll say to a client, I know you're not living your life as if it were that important that you were leading hundreds of thousands of troops across the English Channel, but you should. You should lead your life that way as if your life were important. So we would be having a deep conversation about the client mattering, that this matters, not to Martians and Venusians or to anybody else, but to the client herself. Getting this work done matters. Lots of folks right now are extra disappointed in themselves because they have this, so to speak, free time, and they're not writing their novels and not painting their paintings. So not only are they not getting their work done, but they're extra disappointed that they're squandering this free time. So this is the conversation I would have about them mattering and them having to work in the middle of circumstances, that we're always in the middle of something. We're always in the middle of something, and we have to show up irrespective of being in the middle of the things in which we're in the middle.
I think this is a really good example of why it's so great to have a therapist or a coach, because if you have someone that's working with you to uncover those blocks, it's super helpful. How would you recommend that somebody does that without a coach? Or is that really the self-direction that you talk about in the first part of the book, identifying your direction and making a commitment to it?
That's right. I describe elements of practice as the first third of the book. And as you say, that kind of self-direction and self-trust are elements of practice, but so is honesty. I think that's the big one. We're tricky creatures. We don't really want to be honest about what's going on, so we'll say something like, I'm tired or I'm busy. Those are the two things people say the most nowadays to make sure they don't get to their writing or to get to their practice. So we have to notice that we're the ones saying, I'm busy, and then we have to append the big but there, big B-U-T. I'm busy, but I can write for 20 minutes, or I'm tired, but I can do a little work for 5 minutes. We have to be honest. And this is a side subject, but recently I've been developing a philosophy of life called Keirism.
Yes, you wrote about that in the book, actually.
Yes, and I have a book out on that called Lighting the Way. And one of the Keirist ideas that I developed is the idea of taking a step to the side, a very simple idea. But we don't typically give ourselves enough space between what's going on and our ability to think about what's going on. And so the main thing, whether it's with respect to a plot problem in your novel or why you're not getting to your writing or whatever, it's to take that big, honest, difficult step to the side and ask yourself, what's going on? What's going on here? That's really 92% of the work is stepping to the side and asking, what's going on here?
And what do people usually say?
It's not usually a word or a sentence, but it's a conversation. It's a self-questioning, a personalized Socratic dialogue. Well, I'm just going to make one of these dialogues up, but I think the first third of the novel is pretty strong. I don't know what happens on about page 100. That's probably the place I ought to look, but I really don't want to go there because I think blah, blah, blah. That it's that kind of self-talk where you think about the thing, meet your own objections, announce the difficulties, and then once you then set an intention, let's say the intention is, okay, I realize I have to revise the novel. Once you set an intention, then you have to align your thoughts with that intention, and you have to align your behaviors with that intention. Life is almost that simple. You set intentions, and then you align your thoughts and your behaviors with those intentions. People working with a coach can be helped to do that, but people can self-coach themselves to do this. Pretty simple thing to say, if not do. Create an intention, align your thoughts with that intention, and align your behaviors with that intention.
Some of this stuff seems very logical. You identify what's important to you. You decide what's most meaningful and purposeful in your life, and then you make a commitment to take the steps towards those things. But it is actually a lot more complicated than that. And that's why I go back to, you call it, it's a muscle that you build.
Yep. I can tell you the rhythm of virtually all clients, which is in a first session, they completely buy and understand what we're talking about. they commit to X, whatever X is, a writing practice or a recovery practice or some other kind of practice, and they get to it in the first week, maybe for 3 or 4 days, and that's a victory. And in the second week, it's 2 days, and the third week, it's maybe no days. For the reasons you just said, that the work is hard, and there are lots of challenges to daily practice, whether it's inner chaos and inner noise and restlessness. Some people just do have trouble staying still and sitting still. Maybe it's some skill set problem that they've set themselves an intention, but they don't have, they want to paint a certain kind of painting, but their drawing skills don't allow them to do it, etc. So there is buy-in and excitement to begin with, and then all the difficulties arise, and then the real work begins of showing up, even though you've now understood that this is going to be real work, hard work, maybe until the end of time. If there's no smiley face to put on this, no guarantees that come with this. Process is process. There's no way to circumvent process. You may spend 2 years writing a novel that never comes alive. That's a sad thing to say, but the truth of the matter, that can happen. So there's a lot of maturity and learning coming after you've agreed with yourself to institute some daily practices.
Yeah. We've been talking about writing just as an example, but in the book, you talk about 18 different daily practices. And I was curious, what are the most common practices that people start? I feel like it's, you don't think about exercising every day as a daily practice, but really that is a daily practice, right? You make a commitment to feeling healthy and to being in shape. And so you practice, or your meditation, meditate 20 or 30 minutes a day. That's your practice.
Yeah, I think I can identify some of the top ones, some of the top three or four. One is the creativity practice, because of course, people are coming to me are creative performing artists. That's what I'm known for. That's who I work with. So creativity, meaning also a performance practice, but one of those kinds of practices. I think second, and this is interesting, because I describe something I call a warrior practice, and because so many people have that feeling that they need to empower themselves in some way, build their confidence, do something along the lines, the parallel warrior practice, finding that a lot of people are adopting that warrior practice as something, and they, of course, have to define it and figure out what they mean by their warrior practice. Is it taking a particular kind of risk? Is it doing this or that? But the warrior practice one is very popular. Also popular is a health practice. People, an awful lot of people have chronic ailments of one sort or another, and they know that they have to do things in support of their health. So the health practice, healing and health practice, both of those popular. And then one that I try to sell because I think it's particularly important is also popular. And that's the one I call a personality upgrade practice. And let me say a couple of words about that, what I mean there. I have a vision of personality as being comprised of three component parts: original personality, how we come into the world, because we come into the world already somebody, and then formed personality, the way we stiffen over time into the personality everyone sees, and then what I call available personality, our remaining freedom to be the person that we would like to be. So a personality upgrade practice is using our available freedom to reclaim some of that freedom from our different personality. That can be any sort of desire, any sort of upgrade that one might want. It might be to become a calmer person or a more passionate person or a bigger risk taker or whatever. But that personality upgrade practice speaks to a lot of people. And I would say that it and the warrior practice and the creativity practice and the health practice are maybe the, so to speak, most popular practices.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
You talked a little bit about how to start based on defining your purpose, or even if you're talking about personality upgrade or warrior, really, how do you want to improve who you want to be in the world? What are some of the strategies, and you talk about these in the book, but for dealing with your practice? You talked about specifically like cognitive or anxiety management. Will you go through some of those and give us an idea of how we deal with the challenges to each of these practices?
Let's start maybe for a second with the idea of starting. Just
great.
Call it initiation, but really it's just another way of saying you got to get your practice started. I think one of the important keys to getting a practice started, whatever the practice is to have some ceremonial bridge between everyday life and the practice, something that you do or think that makes it clear that you're about to start your practice. The ceremonial bridge I like a lot. I've done a whole book on this called 10 Zen Seconds. The 10 of that title is about a deep breath, 5 seconds on the inhale, 5 seconds on the exhale. So one ceremonial bridge I like is to just engage in a little deep breathing, maybe 3 or 4 deep breaths, and drop a useful thought into that deep breath. So it's an affirmation and a breath. I call them incantations just to distinguish them from affirmations. But it's a way to help yourself move from the hurly-burly of everyday life, the rushiness of everyday life, to your practice. And the phrase that I invite people to drop into that deep breath is, I am completely, on the inhale, stopping. I'm completely stopping. And that doesn't just mean I'm completely stopping my rushingness and getting ready to practice, but it also means for creative people, and this is a big deal, I'm completely stopping my need to get things right. It's very important because all day long, and this is appropriate, all day long we're supposed to get things right. Drive on the correct side of the road, pick our kids up at 3, do one right thing after another. But in our practice, we do not necessarily need to get things right. In fact, we may need real permission to get things wrong, to make a big mess. If we're learning a new technique, if we're learning a particularly hard passage on our musical instrument, whatever it is, we need permission to not get it right. And so that's why I think the idea of a ceremonial bridge is so important, because not only does it demarcate the normal day from this practice time, but it helps remind you that this practice time is different from the rest of the day. It's a time in which you can be more imaginative than the rest of the day, make bigger messes than the rest of the day, be more present than the rest of the day, etc. So that's just one tactic, is to have a ceremonial bridge between everyday life and your daily practice. As to challenges to daily practice, there are a lot of them, but let me just tackle the headline one, which is anxiety. We just get anxious as we do anything that's hard. People want to flee hard encounters. Easier to turn on the TV or check your email one more time or play a computer game than to write your novel. Just hard to write your novel and easier to do the other things. So while we're there trying to write our novel, we get anxious, which means everybody, all my creative and performing artist clients, but everybody needs an anxiety management tool or two that actually works for them. And that's portable. It's one thing to have a wonderful meditation practice early in the morning and be calm early in the morning, but that's not exactly so useful when you turn to your novel. When you turn to your novel, you need some tactic that allows you to be calm right then. So I would say that in terms of challenges to daily practice, the biggest one may be free-floating anxiety, and the answer is to have some anxiety management tools that actually work.
And what are those?
One visualization I like is picturing a switch somewhere inside of you where when you flip it, you just become a calmer person.
Oh, I like that.
It's a very simple visualization, but it's really what that visualization stands for is you making a decision to be a calmer person. Less dramas, less histrionics, less this, less that. That flipping of the switch is you sort of agreeing with yourself or demanding of yourself that you become a calmer person. There are lots of anxiety management strategies. In one of my books, I think Mastering Creative Anxiety, I think I go through 20 categories of anxiety management strategies. So there are lots of things to try, including one of the things that makes us anxious. One of the reasons we fear flying is not just how does that big machine stay up there, but what's called inhibited flight. That is the smallness of the seat, feeling trapped. And we can feel trapped in our own daily practice and be made anxious by feeling trapped in our own daily practice. The antidote, get up and walk around for 1 minute. It's that simple.
Right.
It's something we can't do in a plane too easily if the seatbelt sign's on. But at home, we can get up and walk around our chair or walk around our yoga mat or whatever and reduce our experience of anxiety that way. So this is a long-winded way of saying there are many things to try. Most people, though, don't really try out any anxiety management tactics that might, in fact, work for them.
That's what's so awesome about the book is that you've got all these different ideas.
Yeah, something I said earlier, but because it's something that folks don't understand, you have to repeat these things and you have to not need the experience to feel meaningful. That's such a big deal idea. If you come to whatever your practice is, I mean, this is the way the conversation would sound, wouldn't it? Oh, I'm going to work on my instrument today and that's going to be a meaningful experience because I love my instrument. And then you work on it and it doesn't feel meaningful and it's very hard to come to it the next day.
Yeah.
So just expect tiny experiences of meaning in life. 3 seconds here, 7 seconds there. Meaning comes and goes. I'm saying some big things really probably too quickly, but I do want to get this idea on the table that and our ability to stick with our daily practices connects to our understanding of how meaning comes and goes.
Well, and also that bigger life purpose.
Yes.
Because if your life purpose changes, if you don't want to be a famous musician or a novelist, then maybe you stop that daily practice and you reinvestigate or identify what is most important to you, because there could be a challenge in there too.
You may have to reframe your life purpose so that you can get your work done. You may have to do some massaging and inner conversation about this. I'll give you a simple example. Let's say you start a PhD program in something and you expect it to be meaningful and it's one of your life purposes. And 6 months in, you see that you don't like it or it's not meaningful to you, but you still have this dissertation ahead of you. Well, how are you going to get to this dissertation? So many graduate students have this problem that they're not really interested in their subject any longer, but now they have this dissertation to do. Well, you're going to have to change your life purpose from caring about this to, I really want the professorship or some outcome-oriented life purpose that allows you to finish up the dissertation or else leave the program. Of course, that's another kind of option. But if it's your decision that you're staying in the program, and you want to get the dissertation done sooner rather than later. So you have to have a conversation with yourself that allows you to show up each day to the dissertation, even though you may be hating it.
There's a lot of really great stuff here. Are there other things in the book that you want to share with us? I feel like I was so interested in the 3 different sections and looking at all of the different daily practices. And we've talked about the most popular daily practices and how to get started and what some of the obstacles are. And certainly the challenges. Are there other big things that you think it's important to know if we don't have someone that's working with us on this?
There are so many things one could say, but let me just mention one practical thing that I think is valuable for the creative folks listening. And that is, of course, the daily creativity practice or daily writing practice could be any time during the day, but I really like to sell clients on it being the first thing each day. For a variety of reasons. One, if you try to leave it to the end of the day, most people have no neurons or energy left by the end of the day to work on their novel or what have you. Mm-hmm. It's just unlikely to get to your real work by the end of a day. So that's one reason for it to be first thing. But another reason is you get to make use of your sleep thinking. If you work on something like a novel first thing each day, your brain will have been working on your book overnight and you can, so to speak, take dictation. It's a big deal way to make use of the way that your brain thinks during the night. So that's 2. And 3, by getting to something real first thing each day, you have the experience of having made some meaning on that day first thing, and the rest of the day can be half meaningless and you won't get depressed.
Well, then you always have your mental health practice for that.
Exactly. They're married together. It's important to get to something real first each, rather than just turning to your to-do list of all the millions of things to do. That's not a way that's really very centering and grounding or feels very good. But if you get to 20 minutes of some real work first thing each day, that puts a different light on the whole day. So for a creative person, I would say just as a tactical matter or a practical matter, have your daily creativity practice be the first thing you do each day.
Yeah. What are some of your daily practices?
I work from about 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. straight on the variety of things that are important to me. Typically, that's a book first thing. I've done 50 books. It's the way I do at least a book a year, by showing up each day to the writing first thing. But then there are other things that I do also that are included in those 6 hours that I'd have to probably tease apart to name clearly. But my daily practice is this pretty straightforward, steady, 6 hour, 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. thing.
I think that's ambitious for most of us, but that sounds great.
Indeed, but there you go.
Anything else that you want to add before we close today?
I'll just invite folks to come to my site, ericmaisel.com, ericmaisel.com, and come visit.
Yeah, well, you've got lots of books. This was the first one that I've read, and I was super happy to be introduced to you and to your practices. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Bye for now.
A big thank you to Eric for being with us today. For more information, check out his books wherever you get your books. His website is ericmaisel.com, and you can learn more about him and his 50 other books and his coaching practice there. If you have feedback, comments, or suggestions, please email us at untangle@choosemuse.com. And if you want to check out Muse, head over to choosemuse.com and use the promo code MUSESTRESSLESS for your discount. We're wishing you all a peaceful week. We will see you next time.